Well, welcome very much to Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass. I have on the phone right now, I'm very happy to have with me Nadine Budge from the Stetson Family, a bluegrass band located in Australia. Hello, Nadine. How are you?
Oh, good, Steve. How are you going? Oh. What time is it there?
Time is it here? It is now Sunday morning, about 8:22.
Okay, so I haven't got you out of bed. And it's what is it? So it's about, it's 10:22. Okay. Yeah, so that's good time.
So
good
timing. You're probably, as a musician, you're probably just now waking up.
No, I've just come home from a gig.
Okay.
There's a lovely afternoon gig here that that I've been to this afternoon. Got home, had some dinner, and that's it. I was just there on the telly, just watching a bit of TV.
Good, good. I was kidding about the waking up part. I like it when musicians call me before noon. I can tell they're still rubbing the sleep out of their eyes. But so, well, this is great. So I want you to, I've got the album, The Stetson Family, Oh Winding River, which is, thank you so much. It's an excellent album. I love all of the influences I hear from what you're doing. I want to talk about a couple things. We were speaking off the air about, oddly enough, yesterday on the show, we had an Irish band. In Irish band, there's an obvious flow from Ireland, Scotland, other influences also into what we call bluegrass music or bluegrass influence music. So I get that. I get that pouring from outside to in. And then what we were talking about is I want you to take the opportunity to explain how it jumps back across the water to Australia. Where did you, Stetson Family Band is an excellent bluegrass band. Where did you pick up the influences? How strong are bluegrass influences in your area of Australia? Let's just explore that for a minute, if you don't mind.
Okay. Well, here in Melbourne, there's a very rich music culture, and I think that really crosses a lot of musical boundaries. And from what you were saying before with the Irish and the Scottish coming over to America, we also had a lot of Irish and Scottish immigrants come here to Australia. So there's lots of Irish pubs.
Okay.
There's lots of folk music here in Australia that's come from the Celtic background. So we've got a lot of old-timey music here. We've got a lot of Irish folk music here. And from that just comes bluegrass. And, of course, when we were growing up, when I was growing up, the Beverly Hillbillies was on.
Oh, yes.
So I think everybody had heard of Flatten Scruggs back there in the 60s. And for us, I guess with the Stetson Family and lots of other bluegrass and bluegrass-influenced bands over here, the big thing came, I think, really with Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Really?
Which is 10 years ago or so. So since then, there's a glut of bluegrass bands here in Australia.
You know,
so I really think Oh Brother, Where Art Thou has had a really big influence.
That's interesting. Now, showing my ethnocentricity, which I don't mean to do, so you had the same in Australia because of migration of musicians from Ireland and Scotland to Australia, separate from the impact they had in America. You had that same movement to Australia so that some of that Irish or Celtic, Scottish music, indigenous to those parts, came to you. It didn't come from America. The foundation was there, right? You already had the old-time fiddle, banjo type acoustic music.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have these influences then externally maybe imported from America, which would be things like Flatten Scruggs via the Beverly Hillbillies, and then more recently the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. Okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. That makes perfect sense now.
And also I think as Australians, because we're so far away, I think we have inquisitive minds and a great lust for music. And so there's a big blues scene here. There's a big jazz scene here. There's a big folk scene, everything. I don't know what you would call classic Australian roots music, because pretty much it's all come from everywhere else, because I think really, Steve, we're a bit of a mongrel bunch over here. We've all come from other places apart from the indigenous people here in Australia, our Aboriginal population. Sure. And the rest of us are from all over the world. So our influences in food, music, all the cultural influences are from everywhere.
Well,
and bluegrass is just a part of that.
Yeah. And so then And you are on an island. You're a huge continent, which is an island. So am I wrong that things come there and they have a little more time to gestate and just kind of hang around? That's why you have, you know?
No, you're right there.
You can't get away. Sure. I'm being silly, but I mean, you can't. It gets there and then you stay there and you listen and kind of percolates a little bit. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. And then we take it on as our own.
Yeah, sure. Well, yeah. I mean, in the Stetson family, the album I have, Oh, Winding River, clearly there are strong bluegrass, what we would call American roots influences, but also you clearly have your own influences are very strong in the songwriting.
Yes. Well, I guess a lot of, like most songwriters, we just draw from our own experiences. So, and then I guess with this kind of music, we adapt it a bit. And for instance, the song Oh, Winding River could be about any river, but it was written after I'd been over there in the States a couple of years ago. And went to the mighty Grand Canyon.
There you go.
And to Zion and Bryce and all of that, and was just totally amazed by it. So then you come back, and Oh, Winding River, as I said, could be any river, but it is actually written about the Colorado River over there.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was listening to the words of it, knowing that you are the singer-songwriter. I want to pick up the music, but I also am I'm just enthralled with writers and singers and that whole process of, and when I listen to it, if you take out the few references to a canyon, it could be any river. But when the words themselves talk about the canyon, I'm thinking, we don't have any canyons in eastern Kentucky or Virginia. And of course, I've been to Grand Canyon. I'm thinking, that's a canyon. But so we were inspired by the Colorado River running through the Grand Canyon. That's interesting.
Yeah, and the rest of the song, it's a metaphor for life, and that's how I've written it, really, and when we were recording it, it was that idea that as a river flows along, it gathers stuff in its path, and at times it's very, very gentle, and at other times it's raging, it's a raging torrent, and you go through rapids, and then it ends up washing out to sea, so therein being the metaphor.
Sure.
For life, that at times it's nice and calm and everything's going well, and at other times it's washing us around, and then it ends up washing us all out in the end.
There you go. There you go.
There you have it.
So let's talk then, but give me just 30 more seconds of the bluegrass scene, if we want to describe it that way, in Melbourne in particular. When you say there's a lot of the bands there, give me some idea what I'm trying to comprehend here.
Okay, we have just, for instance, next month in October here, we have a 3-day or 2.5-day festival called Jamgrass. And I'd say there's probably 30 bands, mostly from Australia. I think there's a couple from the US coming over, but there would be 30 or so other bands that will play over that 3 days.
And it's probably not going to be 30 bluegrass bands per se, but it's going to be bands that you would see at a bluegrass festival, let's say in the States.
Yeah.
Kind of run the gamut from, you know, from far out jam type of a band to a more standard. So it's 30 bands, but they all have that influence. They all carry that influence with them.
Absolutely. They're all string bands and there won't be any drums on stage.
No drums.
Just like the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah. That's cool. All right. So, gosh, I'm surprised.
No, you should look it up, Jamgrass.
I will. I'll do that.
Yeah, Jamgrass 2013. It's only in its third year, but it's gained so much popularity since it started a couple of years ago that it started off just as a one-evening thing, went for 4 hours, and then it went to 2 days. Now it's gone to 3 days, and everybody and their dog wants to be on it.
Good.
And I think one or two of the women from Delamay over here last year.
Oh, yeah. I love them. I entered. They were Kimber Ludeker, who probably was one of the ones traveling. I don't know. Was on the show several months ago. And what a neat. That band is just fun to listen to. And they're the enthusiasm.
I saw them last year at the IBMA World of Bluegrass in Nashville.
They're so much fun on stage and they're so committed to, you know, I was talking to Kimber and I said, you know, whether you know it or not, and I was at Grey Fox. I was broadcasting from Grey Fox up in New York,
okay.
And which is a fantastic event. So they're on stage, and there's a sea of not only just regular fans, but mixed throughout is a strong contingent of, I'll say, 12, 13, 14-year-old girls. And I said, Kimber, whether after the show, I said, whether you know it or not, you are a I hate to use this term, but you are in fact a role model for all these little, I see all these little girls, because they're 12 or 13. I won't say women, they're little girls. And they know all the words to all of your songs, and you only have one album out.
Mm-hmm.
And I look in their eyes, and I see all these little young girls who stood and watched, for example, Alison Krauss when Alison was very young. That influence to me is just, and Kimber immediately said, no, we want to be.
Yeah.
We want to be. And their whole attitude is just, well, that's nice that you got a chance to see them. They're one of my favorites too back here.
And that's great. There's such musicality in it. It's not just all about production I guess the way a lot of commercial music is made. They're great musicians. They have great stage presence. And I think it's fabulous that they're role models for young girls.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the Stetson family, the band itself. I'm looking at you sent me a nice little flyer along with this album, A Winding River, which I thoroughly enjoy. Tell me a little bit about the makeup of the band as you record.
Well, there's five of us. So there's myself, and I play guitar, and I guess I'm the main singer, and I play a bit of dobro in there. And then there's John Bartholomews, who is also he does some of the fronting vocals there and plays guitar. Got Colin Swan on the banjo and our cool hand Luke Richardson on the double bass. Ooh. And our old Uncle Eck, Andy Carswell on mandolin. So it's a fairly standard lineup of instrumentation, as we've got double bass, mando, banjo, a couple of guitars, and then I slip into the dobro every once in a while.
Yeah.
And we are a self-produced band. So John and Colin, many years ago, had a publishing deal with, I think it was one of the Sony subsidiaries, and they got to build a studio. So Colin, our banjo player, is also the engineer, so he records all of our stuff, and then we produce it. And so we've got like the little Stetson Family Ranch studio out in Johnny's backyard. Down here in Melbourne. Okay. So we slip out into the backyard. We've been back in the studio just last week starting a new album.
Are you really? Okay.
Yeah.
But do you have some ideas? You have songs that you've written? You like to write a lot of the things originate from within
the album.
Is that what you're doing on this one also?
Sorry?
Are you originating your own songs on this one? It seems to me you like to write your own.
Yeah, it's all. The next one will be all original as well. Okay. See, this one, O Winding River, it's a compilation, it's a collection album that was made. We've had two releases here in Australia. There's our first one, Hey Sister Mary, which came out, I think, in 2009. And then there was The Devil in His Sunday Best in 2011. And after I was over there at the World of Bluegrass last year, the idea was to come back and make an album to send over there to all of the people that we'd met over there in Nashville and beyond. And the other two albums had a couple of covers on it. There was a bit of, you know, Nashville blues, for instance, and a Lucinda Williams song that we'd done. And what we then decided to do was to take the covers off the songs and just present our own music. So we went from back when we first started 5 years ago of playing predominantly cover songs to now playing fairly much just our own music.
Now, so, we were off the air earlier. We were talking about your adventures at IBMA. Let's take just a second and talk about why you were at IBMA in 2012.
Okay. And what a great experience that was. I woke up one morning and there was an email in my inbox saying, congratulations, your song, O Winding River, has been chosen to be showcased this year at the International Bluegrass Music Association Songwriter Showcase. And I kind of looked at it and thought, no, they must have that wrong. And went to work.
They meant a different Nadine Budge.
Yeah, some other Nadine Budge that had written a song called O Winding River. But no, I read it on my way to work. I then came home and I looked at it and I was expecting to read down through the email and see that there was some kind of catch there. And then I got to the end of the email and there was no catch. I had actually been invited to the Songwriter Showcase at IBMA 2012 in Nashville.
Wow.
So my immediate thought was, I can't go to Nashville. And then within about 30 seconds, it's like, of course I can go to Nashville. So I got on the phone there to Nancy Cardwell, and who's the president there at the IBMA,
yeah, was
and hooked it all up. And a couple of months later, there I was in Nashville,
yeah,
having a ball.
Nancy is, she was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and so instrumental in everything, all the outreach stuff. I think Nancy is, there's a lot of people that work in volunteer levels, but Nancy's a musician, as you probably know, and
yeah,
she's very
yeah.
sensitive to, I mean, I'm not surprised that you had contact from Nancy. It was probably some input she had into the organization to say, here's an interesting thing. Let's pull this into the international, because it is international, Bluegrass Music Association. Mm. Yeah, Nancy's a wonderful person.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure meeting her and getting to know Nancy and a few of the other association people, and, of course, everybody beyond that that we got to meet at some of the industry and artist receptions, and not to mention all of the other musicians that we got to meet over there. It was fascinating. It's pretty fascinating coming to the States from Australia. I love it.
Oh,
love it, love it.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. And of course, when you land in Nashville, if you're a musician, you're pretty much, you know, every other person is one also. So you must have had a lot of good connections.
Yeah, it was great. And we couldn't, I'd left it too late to get accommodation really down in Nashville, in downtown. So we ended up staying over in East Nashville. And
well,
it was fantastic. Absolutely loved it.
That's where all of, not to say all of them, but so many of the people who have become regular transplants to Nashville live in East Nashville. You obviously figured that out.
Really exciting hub of music over there. I saw so much great stuff. And an old friend of mine here from Australia, a woman named Anne McHugh, has been living over in Nashville, I think. Well, she's been in the States now probably for 10 or 12 years, but she left LA and went to Nashville about 5 years ago. So I caught up with her over there in East Nashville, and you know, as she said, it's the place where everybody wants to be.
Yeah.
You know, so great. Loved it.
We were, I want to talk to you before we leave and about your website. Don't let me forget that, the website and all that information. We'll do that. But we were talking before we went on the air about this song, Brother Harlan. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I, as I tell you, I am from Kentucky and my family's from Kentucky for hundreds of years. And it's, tell the story about Brother Harlan, because you mentioned before we went on the air that it's actually a true story.
Well, Brother Harlan is a true character. There is stuff that I made up, of course, in there.
Sure.
But now there's another Australian musician. She's an amazing blues musician, a woman by the name of Fiona Boys, who is a very good friend of mine over here. And is it the Handy Awards over there, the Blues Awards?
Yeah,
W.C.
Handy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a W.C. Handy Awards. So she's been nominated many times now there, and she plays a lot over in the States. And her husband is a preacher, and he was he lived in Kentucky. He's an Australian guy, but he lived over there in Kentucky for 12 years and was a preacher over there, a Baptist minister. And we were all sitting out in the backyard here one night in Melbourne, and Steve, her husband, Steve, the preacher, was just telling, great storyteller, and he was telling a story about having to go out and meet up with this guy, Brother Harlan, out there in the back blocks of East Kentucky somewhere. And Brother Harlan was, in fact, a snake handling preacher, and he had been bitten, and our Steve went to the door and knocked on the door, and apparently his wife came to the door and said that Brother Harlan was in bed and wasn't feeling too good. So that was where the line,
surprise,
Brother
surprise.
Harlan's feeling poorly, he's taken to his bed, comes from. So it is really a true story, part of it. I'm not sure about the bit where he's gone off with his cousin or something that's in there. But
well, you had to put that in. That was a free one.
Yeah, that was a freebie. That was just a bit of artistic license.
You know,
made the rest of it up.
I'm from Kentucky, and I keep telling that to you so you have some perspective of who you're talking to. And
mm-hmm.
But there's the old joke that I don't know any of the people that are that far deep into the mountains. I mean, I have friends there, but my family's not that far south or southeast. Mm-hmm. But there's the old joke about the guy who lives so far back in the sticks that even the Episcopalians handle snakes. Which the whole image, the imagery to me is just hysterical. And then why it's Episcopalians, I don't know, because maybe it just sounds more stodgy in the notion.
I think so. It's just in the word. It's in the language itself.
Exactly. So anyway, that's a great song. I will play. It's a great song. And I will play a lot of your music before and after this interview, Nadine, but because of the way we're doing this, I'm not going to stop and start. Okay. Mm-hmm. Typically when I do an interview, I click off, but we're doing this via Skype, which, as we both agree, is a magical invention that neither one of
us. It's straight from the Jetsons. I love it.
And it's your evening there. I'm morning here on Sunday. And so we're going to continue to talk a little bit about the music by the time I play this, which will probably be next Saturday. It'll probably mm-hmm. be the upcoming Saturday on the show. And I will surround it with lots of songs. And so I'm asking you to talk about some of those songs so that when I play them, there'll be some relevance. Now, typically, sure. Someone calls in live. I pick a tune. My pick was Brother Harlan. You spoke about Oh, Winding River. We both fell into that. Let's one other tune off of this album that you would like to speak about so that when I go back and play this live, I will follow our interview with that tune. I usually do one for me, one from the artist, and then I usually end with another one from the artist in the current CD. So do you want to take one of your wonderful songs and explain it so that when we play it, they'll get the backstory?
Okay. I guess one of the other ones where there's quite a backstory is that it's track 11, Hell Hath No Fury. And that was written a couple of years ago when we went through a great lot of natural disasters here in Australia. I guess, like you guys over there, you have floods and you have forest fires or wildfires, as you call them, bushfires, we call them here. And we went through a period where the south of Australia was burning while the north of Australia, which was going through the monsoon at the time, was having cyclones. So, and then a month or so later, just across the Tasman in Christchurch in New Zealand, there was a massive earthquake that decimated the city of Christchurch.
Horrible.
And so all of those things happened within a month or so of each other. So we had raging bushfires. We had a flood up in the north of Australia, just north of Brisbane, that wiped out an established community. So a whole town was wiped out and there was a lot of people washed away and a lot of loss of life in that. And I guess that song, Hell Hath No Fury, is pretty much about Mother Nature just coming up and giving you a good old swift kick every once in a while and making you know who's in charge, really.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Hell Hath No Fury.
Now, how far are you, just for perspective's sake, we think of Australia, it's an island, yeah, okay, but it's huge. How far are you actually from Christchurch?
We're across the Tasman Sea, so Melbourne is the southeast of Australia, so we're not quite on the eastern seaboard, mm-hmm. but if you just, I guess it's a four-hour flight
okay.
to go from Melbourne across to the North Island of New Zealand, so we're 3 or 4 hours flying time away from there.
Well, I think everyone the worldwide visited that area with all the footage and just incredible devastation that we all saw. We all thought, oh my God, this, like you said, the whole town was just destroyed.
Mm, yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
How are they doing? We get all the disaster reports. We don't get so much about the aftermath. How is the town doing, if you know?
I've got a friend over there and she actually works for the, she's a paramedic, so she works for the ambulance service, and she is still just kind of, I guess, blown away by the whole thing. And there's a lot of stuff that will never be rebuilt. Yeah. And as she was saying a while ago, it's one of those things when the eyes of the world are looking upon something that's happened, a natural disaster, and everybody's there and everybody's supportive for a month or two and everybody digs in, and then, of course, the media goes on to somewhere else or somewhere else in the world, something happens, and then it gets left. And she said it's been quite devastating. And there's parts of that city that'll never be rebuilt. And a lot of people, I guess like you guys over there after, say, Hurricane Katrina, a lot of people have left there and they'll never go back because they've got nowhere to go back to.
Yeah, what a tragedy. What a tragedy. Mm. Hey, let me before we tie it up, thank you for explaining that song, by the way. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass. I'm enjoying thoroughly speaking to Nad or Nadine Budge of the Stetson family, who is back in Melbourne, Australia, and so kind to arrange to flip the world around so that we can talk in real time and record this. Let's talk about, I'm looking at the picture and I'm just real distractible about these things. I want to know about the instruments that you play. Where do you get your instruments? What are you looking for when you decide to enter into this world of sort of bluegrassy sound? You kind of know the template of what to get, but where do you get them?
Okay, well, Colin Swan, he's a mad banjo player. He picked it up and he's obsessed with it. So he comes over to the States and buys his instruments over there. So he's got Stellings and Deerings. And in that photo that I assume you're looking at now, I'm holding there a Black Lightning resonator guitar. Sure. And that was a present that the guys in the band, John and Colin, two of the guys in the band, gave me for a birthday a couple of years ago, because I had an old Dobro sitting around here. And that song, Brother Harlan, I'd never played the Dobro before. And that song, Brother Harlan, I could hear a Dobro line in there. So I went and bought an old Dobro just to see if I could give it a bit of a whirl and play it.
That's a nice touch.
Yeah, from that, then the guys actually bought me the Black Lightning, and it's a lovely guitar. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the reason I ask is this, because it's not always that easy to find quality instruments here, you know, and sometimes you travel to Nashville. There used to be smaller shops that would specialize in high-quality instruments, and, of course, they all went out of business because nobody's buying them. You just can't make a business doing that. I'm just curious, as I look at the photograph, where do you get these things? Okay, so you kind of got to pull it together, and you're looking for certain sounds. And like you said, Colin comes back. He's got a nice collection of banjos, obviously, from what you've described. And the thing about owning banjos, there's never enough. There's always room for one more.
Always room. That's what he says. Yeah.
I have a basement full, although I'm afraid to count them because then I would have to face reality.
Mm-hmm. So what are you playing?
I mostly play right now a Chief, a Sonny Osborne Chief that I bought from Sonny a few years ago.
Is that what I'm looking at? I've got a picture of you here on my screen. When you call me, your photo comes up, and there you are playing.
That black and white photo is actually, that particular banjo is several years ago. That's an Ohm, OME, that I purchased from the owner of Ohm Banjos. And what they asked me to do was make a photograph. And I don't take photographs well.
I think you do. Well, you look smashing.
Oh, there you go. See, what I did was, I'm at work, so I take my tie off and my suit, and then I take they go to the studio. That's an Ohm banjo, and that picture is actually on the Ohm banjo website for their gallery of artists.
Okay.
So I took that just to be fancy looking. So yes, that's me that pops up there, and that's an Ohm Stelling. I mean, that's an Ohm Gold Juggernaut, beautiful banjo. Then I mostly play now the Chief. It has a darker tone. That's the way Sonny set it up to be like his old master tone from the 30s. So it has that darker I keep saying Stelling because Ohm has that very bright, brighter sound like a Stelling. Mm-hmm. I have a collection of odds and sods and whatnot. So
I love the darker sound.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Rich, dark.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what my Chief does, and that's what Sonny set it up to sound like his old edit made from the ground up in all the parts. He tries to make components that will recreate that. The fourth string, Colin will understand this, when you play the fourth string on the Chief, it actually rumbles in your chest.
Oh, wow.
You know, you can actually feel that come across your chest.
Don't you love that when instruments do that to you, they talk to you and you feel like that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And people quite often, I'm going to go and buy a guitar and what should I look for? And it's like, if you've never played one, you'll know it when you go in and go to the music swap shop and play as many guitars as you can, and it's the one that talks to you, the one that feels right in your hand, the one that resonates through your body, is the one that you're going to walk out of the shop with.
You are absolutely right. And then not only just a brand, pick, play difference of the same brand because they're all different.
Yeah.
You know, they're all...
Well, they're all different bits of wood and they're all the different skins and... Yeah.
Oh boy, I've enjoyed this so much, Nadine. So much for
fantastic. Me too, Steve. We must do it again sometime.
Good. Well, if you have a new album, you're going to have to send it to me. Then we can do this again.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's make sure on how people get their hands on this wonderful "O Winding River." Go through your slowly. Go through your contacts with the website and how they can get their hands on this.
So, if people go to www.thestetsonfamily.com. The album is up on there and it's there to, you can download it. And I think it's about $10 or $12 to download. And it'll be cheaper for you guys because our dollar is falling over here against the greenback. So, or there is a, you can buy the physical album and we send it over to you. So I think that's about $20 and that includes all of the postage, etc.
Well, your note to me, Nadine and I have a similar, I like to have things in my hands. And we were trading emails about this. And I said, you know, I can download it, but as I'm sitting here right now, I have it in my hands. So she writes me a note that says, here's our own old-fashioned CD, none of the download rubbish.
Yeah.
I like to have it and feel it and touch it and look at it. And just, you look at it and you think of the images and you give you something to contemplate while you're listening. So I appreciate that so much. But
what are all the young people going to do? What are they? Then they've got their iPods and there's no artwork and there's no liner notes and there's no photo. It doesn't... You don't get the same sense of the music.
No, you can't go to a record store and just, you never had money to buy a record. You would just go read them all.
Mm. I'm just being old fashioned, really.
No, I'm with you 100%. You don't get, first of all, we could talk about MP3s and the fidelity and the issues involving those. I think it's way different. They're not listening to the full frequency of all those nice little tiny sounds from the strings and the big sounds. They don't get that because they're looking for...
Yeah. It's all compressed.
Yeah, it's all compressed. But you don't get to go. Like, you know, if you had, when I was a kid, if you had $6-$7, you could buy an album, maybe. But mostly what you would do is spend a couple hours in a record store just thumbing through records. That's how I learned about all kinds of different jazz and different blues. And just, you know, I didn't always buy them, but I read the back. Leonard Feather.
What a great way to spend a day.
It was great. But you can't do it anymore.
Well, one of my favorite record stores over there, there's Waterloo Records over there in Austin. When we were over there a few years ago, that was probably a regular afternoon outing, was to go over to Waterloo Records or to Amoeba in San Francisco or Los Angeles and spend hours in there, hours and hours. And I don't know if it's the same for you guys over in the States, but there's a big turn back to vinyl over here.
It's slow.
Many of the bands here in Melbourne are now starting to produce limited editions on vinyl. It's pretty expensive, but yeah, to have that record in your hand and to be able to pick that needle up and put it on and hear that first couple of seconds of love it.
You have to write a song about the vanishing vinyl.
Yeah.
And that whole experience that you can't go thumb through the old vinyl anymore. Because
we could write a song together, Steve.
There you go. We could do that.
We could do it on Skype.
That's it. Hey, listen, one more thing. Why Stetson Family?
Well, John was kind of known. He went through a hat-wearing phase, and we were calling him J.B. Stetson there for a while, and it really came out of that. Because John and Colin and I, we've known each other for 25, 30 years now, and we were in a band. We were in a pop band back in the 1980s. And then we didn't, that went for, I think we were together for about 3 years or so. And it was a fun band. And we got to play with the Monkees.
No kidding.
And yeah, we did. Davy Jones and Peter Tork came out here to Australia. There was no Mickey Dolenz or Mike Nesmith, unfortunately, but they still called themselves the Monkees. Mm. And we got to play with them all those years ago, which I loved. And so then John and Colin and I have known each other for a long time. So it was just that thing of, you know, Stetson with John wearing his hats and the family, but pretty much because we've known each other for years and years. And when we go away on tour together, it's just like being part of a dysfunctional family.
Perfect.
I'm the mother and I've got four lazy boys. No, I'm just kidding. They're great. They're great guys.
No, you're not. You're serious.
No, I'm not. Don't tell them I said that.
Hey, here's a funny bit of trivia since you mentioned Davy Jones. Do you know what David Bowie's real name is?
No.
It's David Jones. He changed it because the Monkees were so popular. He changed it to David Bowie because he didn't want to compete with Davy Jones, the very same one that you performed on stage with.
Wow.
That's something. No,
didn't know that.
So you're partly responsible for David Bowie's career.
Yeah, I've always thought that. And I'll tell him that when I see him.
For sure, next time you run in.
You wouldn't be there if it wasn't for me.
All right. Nadine Budge, this has been a blast. We will do this again, I promise.
Fantastic. And do keep in touch.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I want some of those stickers.
I'll send them to you. I promise they'll be in the mail this week. I say that to people, then it's like a week passes and I forget, but I will get them to you. So stick around for just 1 minute. But for now, we're going to say goodbye on the recording. Nadine Budge of the Stetson family from Melbourne, Australia. It's been an absolute blast. I guarantee you we'll do this again.
Fantastic. It's been a pleasure, Steve. And hi to everybody over there in Kentucky. Hope to be over there sometime.
Well, not only that, you know, we're worldwide. So this is going to come right back across the big water on the internet. So yes, I will make sure that everybody in Kentucky knows. And then, but everybody will hear this. So that's the good thing about it. So, all right, we will disconnect now. You stick around for a second, please. And for our audience, thanks so much for listening to Nadine Budge as we talked about the Stetson family and the current state of affairs in Australia. So much information to be gathered on this radio show.